Well, the Wisconsin Dells calls itself the water park capital of the world. 4 million people visit the city each year. But before all the water slides and roller coasters, the Dells was a quiet place begging to be photographed. And for that, enter Henry Hamilton Bennett, H.H. Bennett, the man who kind of made Wisconsin Dells famous. Larry Mueller here on the show. Thanks for taking time to be with us today as we take a look at Wisconsin Dells history with our guest, David Rambo. He is the site director for the H.H. Bennett Studio and Museum in the Dells. And it's going to be great to talk with him about Bennett and the Dells. And I hope you'll join in with your own comments or maybe your own memories of the Wisconsin Dells. Why do you go back every year, maybe? Do you find yourself wanting to take your own pictures of its natural beauty? There's plenty there. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. David Rambo, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
I'm here, Larry, and thanks so much for squeezing us into your schedule. I've enjoyed the show for a while, and especially today about the brewery and brewing. And you're making me thirsty, but I'm stuck here in my office looking over Broadway, which is the main street here in Wisconsin Dells. And this time of year is pretty quiet, but you couldn't tell that for the summer. It gets pretty busy downtown.
Yeah. Well, as I said kind of in the intro, the town is full of amusement parks and resorts, but it always hasn't always been that way. So I did want to travel back a bit, maybe to the middle of the 19th century. So set the scene for us. What was the town like back in the middle of the 19th century?
Sure. The Dells was established, the city, in 1856. And they were, looking at this river, but not for entertainment and tourism. It was a working river. And 170 years ago, this was called Kilbourne or Kilbourne City, and it was named in honor of the railroad's president, who's a very controversial figure, and we don't have time to talk about Mr. Kilbourne. But it was a working city for many, many years, and then tourism kind of took the place over, and that's where we are today.
Yeah. You're the site director for the H.H. Bennett Studio and Museum. And who was H.H. Bennett?
Sure. Henry Hamilton Bennett, it's quite a handle. He was born in Canada in 1843, the eldest of 12 children, which in those days was, fairly common.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 1850s, 1857, there was they called it the financial panic of 1857, and it swept the United States. Primarily because there was a shortage of gold. And it got people moving around. And for some reason, a lot of people from the state of Vermont set their eyes on this part of Wisconsin. I think it was because the railroad had just, ended here, come through the city. The grass was greener, in Wisconsin for these people from Vermont. At that time, Bennett's parents were living in Vermont. They'd moved from Canada several years earlier. And the father, George, his uncle, George Houghton, who was a photographer, and little teenager, Henry Hamilton Bennett, he was 16 years old, came down here to kind of test it out and see what life would be like in Kilbourne City, Wisconsin.
When was it renamed, by the way?
In 1931. People in those days, there was no GPS, of course. So you're looking on a map, you're looking for Wisconsin Dells, and where in the heck is the Wisconsin Dells? So the city changed the name because of the tourists, better finding this location.
So Bennett got himself to Wisconsin. The Civil War started, and was Bennett involved in that? I'm trying to remember the timing.
Oh, yeah. He came down here as a young boy, he's a teenager, He was an apprentice carpenter, and that was his father's main occupation. So he swept up and he learned how to use tools and how to work around a carpentry shop. And that great calamity today we call the American Civil War happened in spring of 1861. Like many of the youngsters of his age, he became very excited about the opportunity to serve his country and fight for the Northern cause in the American Civil War. So he joined in 1861 in a group called the 12th Wisconsin Infantry, and they rode what they called the cars, which is the railroad, down to the middle of our southern states, and they were in what we call the Western Theater of the American Civil War, seeing many really bloody battles.
Yeah, the 12th of Wisconsin is featured prominently in many histories of the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
So he saw a lot of action.
Yeah, unfortunately, he did. And you can imagine his fervor for being in the Army and being in this active war kind of dampened, you know, quite a bit after being away from home and in this dangerous situation for several years.
So but he made it, obviously. And how did he develop an interest in photography?
It was happenstance. An unfortunate incident happened in spring of 1864. As many, you know, infantry privates, Mr. Bennett, Henry Hamilton, took his part in his place in the Army, and at nights, oftentimes they took turns doing picket duty, which was, you know, being a sentry on the outside of the camp, just making sure there are no enemies prowling about that are going to cause you harm. One of those nights, he thought he heard a noise, and he wasn't there. He couldn't figure out what it was. He yelled, "Halt, who goes there?" No answer. And so he stood up on a rotten log, unfortunately put his right hand on the barrel of his musket. The rotten log collapsed, I've been told, and sending a bullet through the fleshy part of his right palm, and out, the bullet came out right under his index finger. And that ended his career in the military as well as his carpentry career. You know, he was trained as a Finnish carpenter, and he couldn't do that anymore. So all of a sudden, you're set up with the situation where you don't know what you're going to do anymore. You know, you're out of the military, no real prospects, and what do you do? So he came back to the Dells, or what was then called Kilbourne, and found his way on his own. And photography was that way he found to change his life, as well as add to what's going on here in this local community.
Well, some of the most iconic photos that we see of the Dells, he took.
Right. He was here early, and so he knew a lot of the haunts and the places that people would congregate and some of the wonderful, breathtaking views we have here. I'm sure most of your viewers have been here before, but the river, the Wisconsin River, is surrounded by these huge sandstone formations that rise out of the water. And the sandstone cliffs you see today are only found in three other areas in the world: Switzerland, Germany, and several parts of New York. So very, very unique structures, you know, these cliffs. And it's something that was just screaming for people to see. And so he was able to photograph some of those really iconic vistas and send them east so people could come and look at them for themselves.
Yeah, was that his role in a way? I mean, he was a great photographer, and I'm sure he wanted to sell his photos, but was part of his idea all along to make Wisconsin Dells a place that people wanted to come to and attract people to the place?
I mean, he certainly, you know, he and his his wife, Frances, or he called her Frankie or Frank, were a good team. They were boosters for the city. And they'd invite people into their shop, into their downtown location to have their portraits done. Also, tourists would come in and ask, you know, where's a good place to get a meal in town? Where do I find a good place to stay? Where do I find fishing gear? Where's a good cigar? You know, that sort of question.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, they sent those people to their friends. But they really were kind of like the unofficial Chamber of Commerce. Now, Bennett himself, I've been told, didn't really like the atmosphere in the portrait studio, just the drudgery of every day, taking the same sort of image over and over. So he taught his wife how to do the studio portrait stuff, the chemistry, as well as the actual techniques and technology of the camera of that time. So he could have his time freed up to kind of gallivant around the river and take, you know, these images that really are the main images we think of Mr. Bennett today outdoors.
Yeah. David Rambo, our guest today, he is the site director for the H.H. Bennett Studio and Museum in the Wisconsin Dells. And he'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. We've got lots to talk about regarding the Dells and Bennett. And I hope you'll join in. You can give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org. We'll take a look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with David Rambo. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about a slice of Wisconsin Dells history on the program today with our guest, David Rambo. He is the site director for the H.H. Bennett Studio and Museum in the Dells. So as we talk with David, I hope you'll join in. Let us know which Wisconsin photographers and artists maybe inspired you, or why do you love the natural beauty of the Dells, or what are your experiences at the Dells? You can call us at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. David, the Bennett Studio was constructed back in 1875, if I'm not mistaken, and it's considered the oldest operating photographer's business in Wisconsin.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
And as far as we know, it's true. You know, the oldest operating studio, you know, photography location in the state, at least. We're downtown on Broadway, and oftentimes we're surrounded with so many interesting things, we're kind of lost in the shuffle. So people find us, and they ask, well, how long have you been here? Since 1875, you know, so it's kind of fun.
Oh, so how did it, how did the Bennett, did he have some money to put this studio together, or how did that all work out?
Well, he originally bought a second-hand sort of ramshackle tin-type gallery, they called it, across the street from where the present location is today. He had a dream of having a purpose-built photography studio, complete with the skylight, you know, and all the backdrops you could roll up and down, and a dark room, and, you know, everything would be right there, as well as a processing center where you could take these images and mount them on cards and things. Unfortunately, he didn't have the money. So luckily, he had connections, and he had a friend who was also a photographer up in the Milwaukee area named William Metcalf, who was in those days, in the 1870s, a bona fide millionaire.
Uh-huh.
Metcalf had made his money selling boots and shoes and leather goods to the Union Army in the American Civil War. So he had his life pretty much made, and he was always looking to help other people in their artistic ventures. And he loaned Bennett $3,230, and that built this whole entire studio. Bennett couldn't pay it right away, so he paid him in increments of $19 a month for several years to pay, you know, Mr. Metcalf back.
Oh man, and so his wife was primarily doing the portraits, and that was that a popular kind of thing back in the day? That portrait?
Well, not at first, of course. In the 18, you know, he started here in 1865, right after the war when he, you know, had hurt himself. Right away, this wasn't really known as a tourist destination, and so they were kind of living hand to mouth the first few years. They decided, Frankie and Henry, or sometimes they're called Frank and Hank, to take their show on the road. You know, if people wouldn't come here, they would go to Sparta and Tomah and some of the smaller cities, you know, around Kilbourne City with a tent. And they would do, you know, portrait photography on glass plates as negatives and also on metal steel plates they called tintypes. And so they did a lot of that work around and about. And that kind of got them going until the tourism really started to kick in. A lot of that was, you know, related to Mr. Bennett getting his photo images of the landscapes out there. So it all worked together.
Well, those landscape photos are amazing. Leaping the Chasm is probably one of the most famous photographs. I've seen it, and I bet a good percentage of the people listening today have seen that photograph. But describe it for us.
Well, in those days, you know, in the 1870s and the 1880s primarily, one of the goals of photography all around the world was to capture an image that would freeze movement. Up until that time, the subjects had to stand very still because an exposure on a camera took 3 to 5 seconds, even in the bright daylight. And if you moved at any time during that time, you'd be forever immortalized as just this blur that nobody could identify. And so one of Bennett's goals, along with other people in our world, was to find a shutter that was fast enough and film that was fast enough to capture an image that froze that movement. He, along with many, many others, were working on that problem, so he wasn't the only one, but he developed a shutter that worked with the spring made from a rubber band. He called it the snapper, and you'd push a button and that snapper would open and close relatively faster than your fingers could take the lens cap off and put it back on. And lo and behold, he, with the new film and this new snapper, he was able to stop the motion of his son leaping from a cliff line to a pillar of stone they call Leap Rock on the northern part of the Wisconsin River. An unknown part of that story, Mr. Bennett was a perfectionist. And so the first try wasn't quite good enough. So he had his son Ashley, hey, why don't you try that again? We'll see if we can get a better pose as you're leaping. And as it turned out, Ashley ended up doing at least 17 jumps before Mr. Perfectionist Bennett got it where he thought that was the best he could do. So,
wow, and, you know, there are no nets or anything.
No, there weren't then.
Luckily,
when you're a 16-year-old, you think you're immortal, you know?
Yeah.
I doubt he thought of the danger, but I'm surprised the dad didn't. And I've often wondered what he told the mother.
there are other photos of dogs doing that same jump.
Mm-hmm. And yet to this day, if you take an Upper Dells, you know, boat run, they'll let you off the boat and you go up, walk a little path up to Stand Rock where all this history happened, and they still have a dog that will go over and then back. And I guess if you're not fast enough, that dog really goes bing bong pretty quickly and you can miss it. But they let the dogs do it, but they don't let humans make that leap anymore.
What was Bennett's day like? What's the average work day like for him?
As the years went by, he became very popular, not here just in the Wisconsin Dells, but in Milwaukee and Chicago. And he did a lot of traveling about promoting the city, promoting his photography, and doing jobs. You know, a lot of times in Milwaukee, he did landscapes, you know, the shipyards and very wealthy people's, I guess you could call them mansions. So he did a lot of traveling and a lot of work outside of the city. Other than that, he would go to the same locations that he'd always loved and take the same images over and over and over, trying to, you know, improve upon what he'd done before. Go ahead.
Oh, I just, Jean in Sun Prairie had emailed us a question about, well, she has not been to the museum, but very intrigued. Are there photos of the indigenous people of the time? Did he take photos of indigenous peoples?
Wonderful. I almost forgot that. The people living here, the indigenous people at that time, of course, were the Ho-Chunk. In those days, they were called the Winnebago, but it's the same. You know, the real name of the tribe is the Ho-Chunk, and they'd lived here, you know, from time immemorial. Bennett, in his travels up and down the river, became acquainted with the Ho-Chunk people and was even for a time invited into their camp to do some photography. And so, of course, the images he did, he wasn't trying to... He was not an ethnographer. He wasn't trying to, you know, provide historical look on these people, but he did just that, you know. He was trying to just make money for his studio and for himself by selling these images. But he did a good thing because a lot of times these images are the only existing images we have of a lot of these the people who lived here.
He was... You mentioned that shutter speed thing that he kind of invented with a rubber band spring type thing. But he invented other things as well, didn't he, related to photography?
Yeah, one of the major things that we brag about here is in those days, to make a print from a glass negative, you would take it outside in a special holder that would hold the negative stationery. Underneath it, you'd have a piece of light-sensitive photo paper, and you'd set it out for a minute or so, and it had to be directly under the rays of the sun to get a good, crisp print. Well, as we know, as the Earth moves, that sun seems to be in a different place all day long, and so photographers all over the world would have to readjust the rack that they had these in to get good prints. Well, Bennett invented a system where the building, the little, it looked like a chicken coop with a rack on the front. He had a wheel put in there that was hooked up to a cable that as the sun would seem to move during the day, you would take that cable and move it a few degrees every hour, and that would keep you facing that sun directly. So instead of moving the rack, you move the whole building. And his person who provided the money for the building, Mr. Metcalf, discouraged him from doing that because he was just a little too far out. But it seemed to have worked. And when this building was finally put on the National Register in 1976, the Smithsonian showed up, and they took that little building or the remains of it, and it's somewhere in the Smithsonian Institute now.
Oh.
Somewhere.
How did it land on the that historic as a historic site?
Well, of course, Mr. Bennett and his wife didn't live forever. He died in 1908, and on New Year's Day. And luckily, he had daughters that ran this business in the 1920s and 30s, and then a granddaughter that took the business over, and she and her husband ran this, and then their kids took up the cause until about 1998. And between the 1970s and the 1990s, things were changing in photography, as you can imagine. You know, digital was coming in finally. They, you know, were like fish out of water. They couldn't keep up with all the new technology. But they decided to, you know, donate this building, and they did, luckily, to the Wisconsin Historical Society. And so our organization has been a caretaker for this site ever since.
Wow, that's quite a story. Did Bennett, did he ever become wealthy?
For his time, I believe he was, you know, upper middle class. He had in his head kind of what my dad had, you know, living through the Depression in the 1930s. He always felt the wolf was going to be at the door if he didn't, you know, be very frugal with his money. And Bennett was much the same. He was always looking for a good deal and not, you know, just spending squanderous amounts of money. So he did okay for himself in his time. Unfortunately, as photography changed in his time, in his lifetime, people had their own cameras by 1900. Little box cameras that they called them box cameras. They could handheld hold those, and you could take your own photos of you in the landscape. You didn't need a photographer to take your portrait anymore. So a lot of things changed even during his lifetime. So I'm sure that had to do with his, you know, worries about where the money is going to come from in the next few years.
Yeah. He produced his images, or many of them, in stereo views. Describe that.
Sure. I don't know if, you know, many of your listeners are familiar with the concept of a stereo view. My grandmother had some of these in the attic when I was a kid, and I'd always get in trouble looking at them. But basically what it is a cardboard card, which is, you know, about 7 inches long and about 3 inches tall. And they look really strange because it's the same image twice on the front, one right next to the other. And it looks exactly the same, although the camera that took that picture had two lenses on it. So they're very, you know, slightly different. If you put it in the right kind of viewer with two magnifying glasses and hold it up to your face, it looks like it's three-dimensional. And, oh, my God, you know, these are black and white pictures. But in those days, that was a marvel in the 1870s. It was like virtual reality today, you know, it was seen as that. Now, as things progressed in time, when I grew up as a kid, we had a version of that. We called it the ViewMaster.
I had one of those.
Did you? Yeah. And these things were marketed for children mostly. And, you know, I had Disney reels and the look at the Grand Canyon and a lot of, you know, things like that. And those little two images would be on a reel instead of on a flat card, and you could just advance it by pulling down a lever. So I'd love to see the ViewMaster come back. I'm looking for places that still make them today, although I'm not having any luck so far.
David, tell us more about the museum, the Bennett Studio and Museum. What do people see when they come there?
Well, sure. Right now, our entrance is through what was at one time the post office, and it's called the Marshall Building, and it's where we have, of course, the first important thing people see is the gift shop. Now, we're one of the few places, if not the place, in the Wisconsin Dells that actually has a bookstore. So you can buy books on photography, of course, Mr. Bennett, other subjects of local history and interest. going through the gift shop. Then you go into our museum, which is talking a lot about the subjects that we just covered, you know, in the last few minutes. Mr. Bennett, how he got into photography, his encounters with the Ho-Chunk people, what are stereo views. We have examples of those to look at. What a blurry picture looks like and how he solved that, you know, with his snapper shutter. And in and amongst all this, interspersed are cameras and technology that are not like the things he used. They are the exact things that he used during his lifetime. Luckily, his descendants were what many people might call hoarders today. I mean, they kept everything, even his invoices and paid bills and things. So there's a wealth of, you know, information and 3D items that we have in the museum to show what his life and what his times were like. You get to the end, you can walk into the original 1875 studio, which has been preserved about as it looked in 1900. And if you have time, you can even pose, and I can do a tintype of you or a glass negative of you using the same chemistry and the same techniques as the great Mr. Bennett did in his day. Leaving that, you come back into the gift shop, of course, before you leave. But before you get to that spot, we have imagery and photographs done by Mr. Bennett's grandchildren and his great-grandchildren, which are what we call the golden age of Dell's tourism. And that's that little space, I think, is the most important space for most people when they come here, because they're showing their kids or their grandkids what they saw when they were first here. And it's living memory that is the most important thing here in our museum.
Yeah, the photos. And do you have any of Bennett's originals?
We do, you know, in the exhibit. Mm-hmm. We do have original stereo views, of course, as well as a lot of his larger format photography. Some of them are called panorama photography. They're over 6 feet long, and there was no negative big enough to take one image like that. And so what he would do is take three negatives, glass, of course, and then piece those together, and without the aid of Photoshop, make these panoramas look like one seamless long view of the river or of the buildings or something like that. It's just incredible.
It's an amazing thing to see, and there's a small charge to get into this to the museum.
There is, yeah. Right now, we open in Memorial Day weekend this season, and it's just a $10 charge, you know, to get in. And for children, a lot less, and for seniors and veterans, you know, of course, a lot less as well. But people are kind of hesitant. They don't know what this is going to be. But once they've gone through, we don't get a bad word. You know, they're very happy they came through and looked through the building.
Well, I tell you what, it's been a lot of fun talking with you today, David, about Bennett and about the Dells and about his life. And I appreciate it very much. Thank you so much for being with us today. Are you online, by the way?
Yes, we are. It's, of course, just with the Wisconsin Historical Society, just hhbennett.whs.org. So look us up, and we hope to see some of you people next summer.
Thanks again. David Rambo is the site director of the H.H. Bennett Studio. Fun talking with him. Tomorrow we'll talk about the last ice age and how it shaped our state and left behind the wetlands so many of us love. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.